This is Dr. Gary Collins. I'm a psychologist and professor of counseling at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, Illinois, and I'd like to talk to you on this tape about loneliness. This tape is not meant to replace a counselor, to answer all of your questions, to solve your problems for you. It's intended as a supplement to your counseling, an added plus which your counselor would like you to hear and to discuss in some later counseling session. We hope that this tape will be of some real help to you as we talk about this very common problem. Not long ago, I was returning from a meeting and listening to a radio interview with a lady who had just written a book about loneliness. "We live in an era of loneliness," she said. "We have honesty groups and sharing groups, encounter groups and therapy groups. We've got books on interpersonal relations and on building better marriages. We are concerned about fulfillment and personal growth and intimacy, and yet we are a people which are surrounded by poverty, divorce, boredom, immorality, alcoholism, and a great tendency to remain aloof from each other. We are," this lady said, "a nation of lonely people." As I traveled along the highway, my mind went back to a time several years ago when I made my first trip overseas. I was 24 at the time. I was a student. I didn't have a lot of money. But my enthusiasm about going to Europe was great. I wanted to see the sights of London. I wanted to visit the museums. I wanted to go to the symphonies and the theaters. I was enrolled in school, and I was excited about studying. The trip overseas was a lot of fun. I got to know some people very well. But when I got to England, my friends scattered. I went off to a little room which was to be my home for the next several months, and I looked around. It was a student room. The paint was peeling off the wall. The bed that I was supposed to sleep on was really uncomfortable. There was a little tiny desk, not really enough room to put away the things that I had brought with me. And the chair in the corner of the room had all of its stuffings coming out of the side. I sank into this uncomfortable chair and began to think. All my life, I'd wanted to go to Europe. And here I was. There were 8 million people in that city when I was there, and not one of them knew me. And the tears came down my cheeks, and I began to think, what am I doing here? Surrounded by all of these people, and yet I was so lonely. 2 or 3 days later, my roommate arrived. He came to share my little room. This man had also come from overseas, and after a couple of days, he decided to do what I really wished at the time that I had the money to do. He decided to go back home. He was so lonely to be away from his friends. But his coming had done something for me. When he came and found that he was lonely, I had spent some time with him. I showed him around London. I didn't know it very well, but I'd been there 3 or 4 days longer than he had, so I knew a little bit about it. And I began to give myself to this man to try and make him feel welcome. And that had done something to help me with my loneliness. I suppose all of us have had experiences like this. We've had times when we're lonely. And most of us would have to admit, if we're really honest, that we still have those kinds of experiences. There are a lot of people in this world who are lonely all of the time, and most of us who are lonely at least some of the time. A lot of people have written about this. Paul Tournier, the famous Swiss writer, once called loneliness the most devastating sickness of our age. Another writer said that loneliness is the problem that plagues more people these days than any other problem. Loneliness has been called the single experience most common to all of us, and yet most often misunderstood. Loneliness has been called one of the most universal sources of human suffering. It's been called an almost permanent condition for millions of people, a condition which has no limits in terms of class or race or age. Loneliness hits everybody periodically. It hits me. It hits you. It may persist shortly, for just a few hours, or it may go on for months, or even for a lifetime. Within recent years, these various people who have written about loneliness have tried to describe loneliness, to analyze it, to suggest a multitude of ways in which we can deal with it. And yet, we are still a lonely people. While loneliness is characteristic of all kinds of people, perhaps there are some that experience it a little more than others. There are, for example, the single people, those who are unmarried, widowed, divorced, separated, people whose marriages perhaps have died, and they have no one with whom to share life, no one perhaps with whom to be intimate. There are other people who are married. They're living with their mate, but they still find that they are lonely. Perhaps their lives are very much like those who live alone, two people living in the same house, but separated from each other, and they're lonely. Then there are the students, caught up in the treadmill of activity, running from course to course and project to project, so busy that there's no opportunity to get together with other people for intimate relationships, and they're lonely. Closely connected with this are people who are very successful, leaders in the business and theological world, people who have neither the time or, for others, the courage to get together with other people and to admit that they are isolated. Then there are the older people, the aged. We live in a society when youth is really thought of as being very important in our lives. What happens if you're old? What happens if your mate is gone? Many of your friends are gone. Your health has failed, and it's difficult to get out and to meet other people. Many older people struggle with loneliness. I suppose one of the most poignant pictures of loneliness that we might have ever seen came in the last chapter of the second epistle of Paul to Timothy. Perhaps you've never thought of Paul as being a lonely man. But if you read 2 Timothy 4, you see Paul writing to Timothy and saying, "Come, Timothy, make every effort to come to me soon." He describes the fact that many people have left. "Only Luke is with me," he says. "Pick up Mark and bring him with you. He's useful to me for service." Paul goes on to suggest that he's cold. "When you come," he says, "bring the cloak which I left behind, and bring the books, especially the parchments." In verse 14, he talks about the fact that some people who were close friends had left him, had done harm to his work. I suspect that Paul may very well have been lonely. Perhaps he was cold. Perhaps he was intellectually bored. Maybe he was discouraged. In any case, it is probable that Paul, at the end of his life, wanted other people with him. This is the kind of experience that many of us feel as we struggle with the questions of loneliness. On this tape, I would like to deal with the subject of loneliness by talking about three things: the characteristics of loneliness, the causes of loneliness, and ways of coping with loneliness. Let's begin first by looking at some of the characteristics of loneliness. Loneliness, as most of us are aware, is a painful experience. It's an awareness that we lack meaningful contact with others. It involves a feeling of inner emptiness, which is sometimes accompanied by sadness, discouragement, a sense of isolation, restlessness, anxiety, and maybe an intense desire to be wanted and needed by some other human being. Lonely people often feel left out, unwanted, rejected, even when we're surrounded by other people. Sometimes there's a sense of hopelessness, a strong desire for almost any kind of a relationship which is going to end the awful pain of involuntary aloneness. It should not be surprising, I suppose, that many lonely people often feel a sense of worthlessness and a conviction that, since nobody really wants to be with me, I guess I'm not worth anything. In order to avoid facing the facts that we're unwanted or possibly feel worthless, many people deny their loneliness. They rush to bars, to encounter groups, to church meetings, to other gatherings of people in a vain attempt to escape from their isolation. But even so, we can still feel isolated and unattached. We may feel that hard as we try, we don't know how to build really significant relationships or gain emotional satisfaction from the relationships that we do have. Now, I think it's very important that we don't confuse loneliness with solitude. Loneliness is something negative, painful, and unwelcome. Solitude, on the other hand, is something which is positive, refreshing, and sought after. Loneliness comes when we are compelled to be alone. Solitude comes when we choose to be alone. Loneliness often is frustrating and makes us feel hopeless. Solitude very frequently is restful and gives us a renewed spirit. Loneliness can be unhealthy and damaging, but solitude can often be healthy and fulfilling. I suspect that Jesus was lonely when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, but I suspect that he was experiencing refreshing solitude on those many times in his life when he pulled away to pray and to communicate with his Heavenly Father. The Apostle Paul, in 2 Timothy 4, I suspect, was lonely. He was isolated from his friends. He was cold. He had little to occupy his mind, and he wanted people to come and to be with him. When we think about these examples of loneliness, I think it helps for us to move from the characteristics into a discussion of the causes of loneliness. Like any other complicated human condition, it is not easy to come up with a list of causes which are going to cover everybody's loneliness. But I would like to suggest 5 categories of causes. Let's talk about the personal causes of loneliness, some social causes of loneliness, some past experience causes, psychological causes of loneliness, and then some spiritual causes of loneliness. Let's begin with the personal causes of loneliness. It is natural, I suppose, to think I'm lonely because I've been rejected. But there are many psychologists who believe that loneliness is something which we create ourselves. Paul Tournier, whom I mentioned a few minutes ago, wrote a book several years ago about loneliness. He said sometimes we're lonely because we have an independent attitude. We have a desire to be alone, so we cut ourselves off from other people. Sometimes we live in the suburbs and live in houses which are spread out from other people, and we don't have time to get together. Sometimes on campuses we live close to other people, but we want privacy. We need to be alone in order to grow and to get our work done. Sometimes we discourage spontaneous visits. We don't call our friends and discourage them from calling us. We like to be independent, so nobody controls our lives. But with this independent attitude, we cut ourselves off from other human beings, and we're lonely. A second personal cause of loneliness is what Tournier calls a possessive attitude. I know a lady who is very lonely, but she is so demanding of other people that they don't want to be with her. She says to other people, "If you really cared about me, you'd come and be with me. You'd call me. You'd spend time with me." Well, nobody likes to have demands like that put on us. And so this lady, in her attempts to get close to people, pushes people away. She has a possessive attitude, which creates some of her own loneliness. Then I know of people who have a hostile attitude. Maybe it's kind of hidden, but they are angry, bitter people. They're highly critical people. None of us likes to be around critical people like that. And if you are a critical person, it's quite conceivable that you're driving people away and creating some of your own loneliness. Then there are people who have a superior attitude. It's the attitude which says, "I'm better than everybody else." And as a result, these other people leave them alone. Then there's the person who has the poor little me attitude. "Isn't it terrible how hard life is? If you could just spend some time with me, I'd tell you how rough it is." Well, that drives people away, too. See, these personal attitudes, the independent attitude, the possessive attitude, the hostile, bitter attitude, the superior attitude, and the poor little me attitude, all drive other people away. And if you have any of those characteristics, it is possible that you are creating some of your own loneliness. Maybe some of your own attitudes are isolating you from other people. Loneliness very often comes because of personal causes. We shouldn't assume, however, that all of our loneliness is self-creative. Much of it is not. And that gets us to our second group of causes. In addition to the personal causes of loneliness, there are what we might call social causes. We live in a time of history when there are a lot of changes going on around us. People are isolated from one another, and that isolation makes loneliness more widespread. There is, for example, technology. Government, business, education, each of these are getting bigger and bigger. And as they get bigger, they get more impersonal, and most of us feel less and less needed. We are no longer addressed personally by the man in the grocery store. We become customers. We are not even known by our name to the credit card companies. We have our credit card numbers. As people become more and more specialists, they are unable to communicate with other people who are non-specialists. And so all of this growth in technology isolates us from one another. But then there's mobility. There are a lot of people who move every year. Moving is a disruptive experience. It tears us away from our friends, separates families, eliminates neighborhood and community spirit. And therefore, people avoid forming friendships in their communities because they know, why should I get close to anybody else? We're just going to move anyhow. Sometimes this even happens in church. We don't want to get close to other people in church because it is so painful when, in our modern technological society, we have to move. There's also the issue of urbanization, coming together into cities. Now, you would think, I suppose, that as we got closer together into cities, that we'd get to know each other better. But sometimes, when we're surrounded by neighbors, we have a tendency to withdraw. And then when we're in a big, impersonal city, we're afraid of strangers. We get suspicious of strangers. And so we withdraw into our homes and our apartments and our condominiums, trying to avoid the noise and the confusion. And as a result, we avoid other people. And even though we're in close proximity to other people, we feel lonely. And then there's television. It's another social factor, social issue that creates loneliness. Television gets criticized many times, and I suspect a lot of these criticisms are ill-founded. Nevertheless, when we're watching television, sitting in front of the screen, we're not communicating even with the people in our homes. Caught up in the unreality of television productions, it's easy to live one's lives through the people on the screen, instead of interacting with our neighbors and relatives. So these various things, technology, mobility, urbanization, television, and a list of other things that are changing in our society, each of these social issues, social causes, can bring about loneliness. So there are personal causes of loneliness and social causes. There are also past experience causes. A lot of the writing about loneliness suggests that sometimes when we're children, we are separated from parents and other people, and this brings us to adulthood feeling lonely. One writer has suggested that most of us need to be attached to people, need to be accepted, and need to be able to relate. What if we have no attachment to other people? Even as children, if we're left alone and don't feel attached to peers or to our parents, very often we feel lonely. What if we don't feel accepted? Perhaps our parents don't spend much time with us, don't give us much attention, don't encourage us very much. And because we're not accepted, therefore, we grow up feeling lonely. Or maybe we have no ability to relate to people. We just don't know how to handle ourselves in a social environment. We don't know how to relate to strangers. We're too self-conscious in relating to other people because we've never learned how to meet other people. And therefore, we feel lonely. So when there's no attachment, no acceptance, and no ability to relate, some of these come because of our past experience, and this creates loneliness. Then there are the psychological causes of loneliness. I suppose each of us has some psychological tendencies which tend to increase our likeliness to have loneliness. Some of us, maybe most of us, have a low self-esteem. We don't think very much of ourselves, or we think that we're shy or weak. Therefore, we withdraw from people because we're insecure or uncomfortable in relating to other people. Perhaps we have an inability to communicate. We don't know how to talk, so we draw away from people, and therefore we feel lonely. Then there's the whole issue of fear. I suppose this is a very common experience. Not long ago, my wife and I were visiting a city on the East Coast, and we came into a little souvenir shop, and there was a plaque hanging on the wall which caught my attention. Later on, my wife slipped out of our hotel room and went back and bought this for me, and I have it hanging in my study. It's a little plaque which says these words, "People are lonely because they build walls instead of bridges." I suppose this isn't the only reason for loneliness, but sometimes individuals do build walls. Sometimes we do build barriers to keep other people out. Very often, this is because we're afraid. We're afraid of intimacy, afraid of being known, afraid that we might be rejected, afraid of being hurt, like we may perhaps have been hurt in the past. Loneliness is painful, but for some people it's less painful than the fear and insecurity that might come if we have to reach out. And so, we have a number of psychological causes of loneliness. Then, there are some spiritual causes. In a famous prayer many years ago, Augustine once expressed our need for God. He said, "Thou hast formed us for thyself, and our hearts are restless until they find rest in thee." God created human beings for himself, but he respected us enough to let us rebel. This, of course, is what each of us has done, and ever since our hearts have been restless because they have been cut off from our Creator. Rather than turning to God in repentance, thousands of lonely people have sought to find meaning in drugs, sex, encounter experiences, work, sports, or a host of other activities which fail to remove the inner loneliness of life. A few minutes ago, I mentioned the Apostle Paul, and I indicated that there was evidence that he was perhaps a very lonely man, especially in the end of his life. I'm not sure what were the causes of loneliness in Paul's life. Perhaps he had personal causes, social causes, past experience causes, psychological causes, or even spiritual causes. But I know that in addition, Paul was lonely because of his work and because of his colleagues. His work separated him from people. I suppose when Paul wrote in chapter 4 of 2 Timothy, "I have fought the good fight, I have finished the course, I have kept the faith," he was not despairing. He was looking for a future. He was looking forward to meeting the Lord, to going to his reward. But his enthusiasm for Christianity had put him in jail. It had led to criticism. And much of the criticism had left Paul all by himself. Some of his associates had gone off on missions, but others, like a man named Demas, had forsaken Paul, and some, we read, had even turned against him. Paul's work and Paul's colleagues and friends had both contributed to his loneliness. Sometimes our work isolates us from other people. Sometimes our friends are not as close as we might like. If you're lonely, especially if you're experiencing prolonged loneliness, perhaps it would be helpful for you to think back over the causes of loneliness which we've been discussing and ask yourself, what is there in my life that might be causing loneliness? But having looked at the characteristics of loneliness and the causes of loneliness, it's important that we look briefly at some of the ways in which we can cope with loneliness. What can we do about loneliness? Several years ago, a book came out in which a man listed some of the suggestions that had been put forward for dealing with loneliness. He said, when you're lonely, you can change jobs, join a club, be positive, be aggressive, get married, get remarried, travel, move, have fun, never be alone, use this record player, listen to the radio, watch television, enjoy the movies, read a good book, take up a hobby, pursue cultural interests, expand your horizons, play, go to church, live a little, remember sex, start working, increase leisure, develop hobbies, renew your goals, volunteer. And then he went on to add, all of these activities may temporarily remedy the pain of loneliness, but they fail to meet the problem on the deepest level. They do not produce the desired long-lasting results for dealing with loneliness. What are some of these long-lasting results for dealing with loneliness? Let me make 5 or 6 suggestions. First, if you want to deal with loneliness, it's important that you admit the problem. Loneliness has somewhat of a negative idea in our society. Some people don't want to admit that they're lonely. Bless others will assume that we can't make friends, that we're a misfit, or that we're unattractive. Let's recognize that everybody is lonely at times. Sometimes it might be our own fault, but lots of times it's not our own fault. If we can recognize that we're lonely, and recognize that we have this painful emotion, then we can do something about it. And that gets to the second thing. The second way to cope with loneliness is to consider the causes. Loneliness, as we have seen, can arise from a variety of causes. If these causes can be identified, perhaps even through discussion with your counselor, or by listening to the previous portion of this tape, then it is possible to work on the sources of the loneliness, rather than trying to cover up our loneliness with busy activities. A third way of coping is to accept what cannot be changed. There are some things in life that can be changed, but others that cannot. Think of the lonely widow, for example, who is lonely because her husband has died. Obviously, she cannot bring the husband back. Neither can we stop and change the technology, which is causing people to move frequently. Neither can we change the trends in our society that might be creating loneliness. There are some things that we have to learn to accept and learn to live with. A man named Harvey Potthoff several years ago wrote a book talking about understanding and dealing with loneliness. He said, we ought to develop some positive interests, learning to appreciate what's good in life, learning to develop a sense of humor. If we can think not about our own miserableness and about our own loneliness, but think positively about the bright side of life, this is going to help. He said also, we can develop a lifestyle of keeping in touch. Even when we can't change things, we can keep involved with other people, in work, in play, in involvement in creative activities, in church activities, reaching out to others in our neighborhoods. This is a way in which we can deal with our loneliness, even though there are some things that cannot be changed. Then Potthoff suggests we need to have a religious faith, something which helps us to see that life is whole and complete, something which helps us to find purpose and meaning in life, even when some things have changed that we can do nothing about. So if we're going to deal with our loneliness, we need to accept what cannot be changed. A fourth way in which we can deal with loneliness is to alter what can be changed. Although some causes of loneliness cannot be changed, as we have seen, other situations can be altered, corrected, or removed. We can, for example, watch less television, spend more time in family activities, or move into useful church activities. All of this involves reaching out to other people. We might even be able to change our self-concept. Suppose we've got the opinion that we're no good, that nobody likes us. Maybe we need to remember that in God's sight, every human being is valuable and loved. Every sin can be forgiven. Sure, we've all got weaknesses. Sure, there are failures in all of our lives. But we can deal with these and go on. We can develop the areas where we have skills, and we can ask God to help us to be the kinds of people that He wants us to be. This enables us to make changes in our lives so we can deal more effectively with our loneliness. Then we can meet our spiritual needs. A fifth way in which we can deal with our loneliness is to draw nearer to God. A popular Christian song once began with these words, "Why should I be lonely? I have Jesus only." God Himself has declared that people really need each other if they are to avoid loneliness. Regretfully, however, some writers have concluded that human contact is the only solution to loneliness. They have failed to realize that loneliness never disappears completely until, in addition to human companionship, an individual is introduced to Jesus Christ. He loves each of us unconditionally. He died for us, makes it possible for us to come to Him by confession of sins. He welcomes us as adopted children and becomes a friend who sticks closer than a brother. His Holy Spirit lives inside of every believer, helps us, prays for us, and makes us more Christ-like. God is very real, and His presence can be sensed. But God is also intangible. He cannot be touched or seen with our eyes. And He knows that we need other people. This is where His body, the church, enters the picture. The church should be a healing, helping community which radiates love, acceptance, and support. Every member of this community is a follower of Jesus Christ, and we need to relate to one another in our churches. As we get closer to Jesus Christ, we need to get closer to others who are Christ-like and who are interested in serving Him. And this is a way in which we can deal with our loneliness. So there are several ways in which we can cope with loneliness. We can admit the problem, we can consider the causes, we can accept what cannot be changed, and we can alter what can be changed. Then we can draw nearer to God. This is the end of side one of the tape. If you look on the tape guide sheet, there are some questions for you to answer following this side of the tape. When you turn on side one of this tape, we talked about the characteristics of loneliness, some causes of loneliness, and some ways of coping with loneliness. On this side of the tape, we'd like to take a somewhat different approach. To begin, I would like you to listen to some people who are talking together in a situation which involves loneliness.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Sue. How have you been doing these days?
Not so good. How come I never get to see you anymore? You don't act like you really care about our friendship.
Well, I have been very busy lately, you know, with my new job and moving into my new place and all.
If you really cared, you'd make some time for me. When you don't call me for over a week, you know, I naturally think you're rejecting me.
But, Sue, you know I'm not rejecting you. I have been very busy.
You yourself have said that people are more important than things. I don't see that in your behavior, at least not with me.
I don't know what to say to you. It sounds like all you can think of is yourself.
Now that you have listened to these people, I would like you to take a piece of paper and a pencil and spend a little time writing for a few minutes. If you could take the piece of paper and turn it sideways, you might divide it into four columns. There is an example of what we want you to do on your guide sheet. On this guide sheet, we are talking about some of the ways in which you might be creating your own loneliness. The example we just heard was a case of somebody who was showing attitudes which contributed to the loneliness of the person who was speaking. You perhaps do some of the same things. On this sheet, look at the different attitudes that we mentioned on the other side of the tape. The independent attitude, the possessive attitude, the hostile attitude, the superior attitude, the poor little me attitude, and some other attitudes. Column 2, ask yourself, do I show any of these attitudes? Column 3, how do I show these attitudes? And column 4, what can I do about these attitudes? You should take a few minutes to fill in this sheet. Ask yourself if you are doing anything to create the loneliness in your own life. When you have completed this activity, be sure to hang on to it. Your counselor will want to see it the next time you meet together. And this time, stop the tape and complete the activity which we have described. Now I'd like to introduce a person to you who is struggling with loneliness. His name is Joe, and I'd like Joe to tell you a little bit about himself.
My name is Joe. I'm married and the father of three lovely children. I have a good job, and I enjoy my work for the most part. Besides work and some golf, I'm not very active. My time is usually spent working, reading the newspaper, watching TV, and sleeping. You know, I have had a hard time admitting it, but my counselor tells me I'm a lonely man. I don't have any close relationships with anyone. Well, this is hard to say, but not even with my family. My counselor tells me that I like to keep people at a distance because I feel safer that way. He also says that it's because I'm afraid of rejection. My loneliness isn't only hurting myself, but I'm beginning to see how it's hurting my family. My wife and I don't really know each other or experience the joys and growth that marriage should have. I know my children don't know me either, and as a result, they're missing out on what they need and deserve for their development. I am a lonely man. I'm lonely because I'm afraid of getting involved in the risky business of loving and being loved. I don't know, but my counselor suggested that I never really learned how to relate on an intimate level because my father was a lonely man, too.
How do you respond to a guy like Joe? I wonder how many people are like that. I wonder if you're something like that. It's so easy to get involved in our activities and to sort of withdraw from people and to discover that we're lonely. Not long ago, a man wrote a book which he entitled Your Fear of Love. He said some people are afraid. In the past, they've been hurt. Maybe they've been rejected or criticized. And as a result, they're afraid to get close to people. Maybe some of us have had good relationships with people in the past. It's been a worthwhile experience. And then something has happened. Maybe we've had an argument. Maybe there's been a death. Maybe that close friend has moved or you've moved. And we've had that sad experience of being torn away from somebody with whom we're very close. And as a result, we don't want to get close to people anymore. I suppose Paul could have experienced some of these same feelings. Paul had had a very busy life, but here he was in prison at the end of his life, writing a note to Timothy. I think it might be a good idea if you went to get a Bible at this point and turned to 2 Timothy chapter 4. Stop the tape while you get a Bible, and then come back and we'll talk about the ways in which Paul dealt with his loneliness. If you look in 2 Timothy chapter 4, you will discover that Paul dealt with his loneliness in three ways. First, Paul reaffirmed his closeness to Christ. In verse 17 of 2 Timothy 4, Paul is talking about some of the difficulties that he has had with some of his critics. But he said, "The Lord stood with me and strengthened me, in order that through me the proclamation might be fully accomplished, and that all the Gentiles might hear, and I was delivered out of the lion's mouth." See, Paul was saying several things. First, he said, "The Lord stood with me," and he stands with all of us in times of loneliness. Secondly, Paul said, "The Lord strengthened me," and I believe he strengthens us when we're forsaken, when we're unhappy, and when we're lonely. Then Paul said, "The Lord worked through me." He worked through Paul so that Paul could bring the gospel to the Gentiles. When we're in times of loneliness, sometimes we don't realize that God in His wisdom may be working through us to reach out to others who may be lonelier than we are. And then Paul said, "The Lord protected me." Along came difficulties, including dangers, and Paul said, "The Lord delivered me." And I think we can expect that the Lord will protect us and provide for us. What was true in Paul's day is true now and in the future. And Paul recognized that. In verse 17, he talked about the past. "The Lord stood by me. He strengthened me. He worked through me. He delivered me." But then Paul says in verse 18, "The Lord will deliver me from every evil deed and will bring me safely to His heavenly kingdom. To Him be glory forever and ever." Paul says the Lord looked after me in the past. I believe He's going to look after me in the future while I'm here on earth. And then there is a certainty that I'm going to spend time in close fellowship with Him forever in the future. No wonder Paul got excited and sang a little hymn in the end of the 18th verse. "To Him be glory forever and ever. Amen." I think, like Paul, in the midst of our loneliness, we can reaffirm our closeness to Christ. We can ask Him to help us with our loneliness, to draw us closer to Him, and to draw us to other people. Paul not only reaffirmed his closeness to Christ, the second thing that Paul did was to recognize his need for people. Four times in this little passage, he asks Timothy to come. Look at verse 9. Make every effort to come. Look at verse 11. Pick up Mark and bring him with you when you come. He closes the passage in verse 21 by saying, make every effort to come before winter. Paul wanted Timothy to be with him. He sent greetings to some of his friends. He sent greetings to Prisca and Aquila in verse 19. And he sent greetings to all of the people who were in the household of Onesiphorus. Paul had many friends. He had many acquaintances. He recognized that there was nothing especially spiritual about being on his own. There was nothing good about being alone or isolated or withdrawn. God created Adam and walked with Adam, but soon he created Eve so Adam could have somebody to be with him. God created us as social creatures, and he expects us to be people who are relating to other people, who are reaching out to one another. And even though it can be risky, even though this can hurt at times, we need other people, and the sooner we recognize this, the better we'll be in dealing with our loneliness. Paul recognized his need for people. Then Paul risked closeness and intimacy. He risked getting close to other people. I'm sure that Paul wasn't very happy up in verse 10 when he said, Demas, somebody who worked with me, has loved this present world and has forsaken me. Down in verse 14, we see a man named Alexander, the coppersmith. He deliberately set out to cause problems for Paul. His friends had left him. Others had gone on missions. He mentions a man in verse 10 who has gone to Galatia. He says, Titus, my colleague, has gone to Dalmatia. In other verses in this passage, we read of friends that Paul had who left. He talks about a man that left in verse 20 who was left behind in Corinth, and another man, also in verse 20, who was sick and therefore could not be with Paul. These must have been painful experiences for the apostle, but nevertheless, he had dared to get close. He developed a concern for others. He reached out to other people in evangelism, discipleship, friendship, and counseling. In doing so, he risked rejection. In doing so, he probably knew that some people would turn away from him and leave him. But Paul recognized that it was more important to reach out in closeness to other people than to stay by himself all of his life and be lonely, even though in so doing he would feel rejected. So Paul gives us three examples for dealing with loneliness: reaffirming his closeness to Christ, recognizing his need for people, and risking closeness and intimacy with others. These are some of the ways in which you can deal with your loneliness. These are some of the issues which you should discuss with your counselor following the completion of this tape. This is the end of the tape on loneliness. Please don't forget to take this tape to your counselor and take along any notes that you may have taken as you've listened to the tape. The examples on this tape are either fictitious or used with the permission of the people involved. Any resemblance to people that you know is purely a coincidence.